Good afternoon. Welcome everybody to today's, this month's even, the LIBF Mortgage Podcast. My name is Gordon Reid, Business Development Manager here at the LIBF and your regular Mortgage Podcast host. In today's podcast, we're going to focus on some of the issues relating to the UK housing stock, to green finance, and in particular to the role of education in developing everybody's awareness of this, and indeed the take-up of green finance initiatives. I'm joined this afternoon by three ladies who it would be fair to say are all very passionate about this topic and have extensive experience, skills, and knowledge in the subject. So not setting you up too early, ladies, but I'm expecting great things this afternoon. They are also first-time LIBF mortgage podcasters, so it's lovely to have some new voices to add to the range of experts I've had the pleasure of engaging with over the last 18 months. So, ladies, welcome. We've got Chloe, Rachel, and Danielle. Lovely to see you all. And I'll do a little introduction in a minute, but nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Gordon. Thank you.
Same to you. Thank you.
Quite all right. So, firstly, I'd like to introduce Chloe Timperley, Senior Policy Advisor at AMI, the Association of Mortgage Intermediaries, and also author of a book about the UK housing crisis called Generation Rent, which I just need to say I discovered this afternoon is available £8.39 in paperback via Amazon and gets
not
really
great. To say this.
No, it gets a really good write-up. I'm going to need to get a copy of it for my next holiday, I think, Chloe. So thank you very much for that.
Unless you want to spend the holiday very angry, I would probably advise against that, actually.
Oh, Chloe.
So, Chloe.
Signed edition, please.
Angry in a good way.
Good, yes. I'm sure it won't make me angry much. Chloe's focus at the Associated Mortgage Intermediaries currently includes green home finance, ESG, the consumer duty, and the later life lending market. So nothing major there then, Chloe?
No, just all in a day's work.
I was going to say, I don't know what you do the rest of the day.
Just sleep, you know.
Fantastic.
It's been a bit manic lately, so.
I can imagine. Next, it's a very warm welcome to Rachel Honeysett from the Green Finance Institute. Having started out as a mortgage advisor and moving into various business development roles, Rachel now has the opportunity in her role at the Green Finance Institute to combine her passion for sustainability with her career. Rachel is responsible for the Green Finance Institute Green Mortgage Campaign with a core focus of creating a scalable green mortgage market, which plays a significant role in improving the energy efficiency of the UK housing stock. Try saying that in one breath.
Absolutely.
But it's again, sounds very, very simple. Again, I don't know what you do the rest of your day.
Fantastic. Well, read Chloe's book, I think, is now my new plan moving forward. But no, thank you very much. It's really, really lovely to be with you today and among such knowledgeable guests.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Rachel. And lastly, I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to Danielle Stevenson. Danielle is Senior Mortgage Product Manager at Virgin Money with over 20 years' experience in the mortgage market. Danielle, again, has worked in a variety of roles, giving her significant knowledge in areas as diverse as sales distribution, data analytics, and risk management. She's now primarily focused on translating Virgin Money's mortgage finance emissions targets into a measurable path to net zero. That sounds like quite an interesting challenge as well, Danielle.
It is. Not as impressive as writing a book, though. Is
well,
it?
and presumably, like me, you're going to be reading this book as well, but
not
on holiday.
I absolutely am. I'm definitely going to be reading it.
No, there are different types of impressive feats. I'm sure your job sounds a bit beyond me with all that different diverse areas to look into.
Oh,
and get, a bit more perspective, a bit more background. I know you're working alongside Rightmove and Xero with funding from the Green Homes Finance Accelerator Fund, with an objective of developing financial products which enable consumers to install energy efficient measures in the home.
So quite yes, we are. It's a great opportunity for Virgin Money. So we're the lead organisation on that. And we have been successful applicants for the Green Homes Finance Accelerator Fund. So we get to work with some energy tech expertise and data expertise from Rightmove. So it's quite an exciting proposition.
And I can see the direct links between what you're doing and Rachel, you know, in terms of improving the energy efficiency of the UK housing stock, which is obviously one of the key challenges, if you like, for the sector. So
it is. And Rachel and I met not last week, the week before, to have a little chat about the things that we're working on and what we're planning to do moving forward.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, hopefully we'll give you a little bit more of an opportunity to talk about some of those things this afternoon. And I think I'm right in saying, I know you just said you met earlier a couple of weeks ago, Danielle. Chloe and Rachel, you've been speaking at the London Climate Action Week conference earlier this week. I think that's right.
We were. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? It was really, we're speaking at a Reset Connect event, and there was such a broad spectrum in the audience, wasn't there, Chloe? It was actually quite good fun for us to go and speak in a really different environment, as much as we absolutely relish the opportunity of speaking with the mortgage family as much as possible. Speaking to so many techies is probably very similar to what Danielle's experiencing with the Power Project, because you're beginning to tie together different parts of the industry across housing more broadly as opposed to finance, which just makes for a fun day out, really, Gordon, and a nice audience to engage with. So it was a very enjoyable, very worthwhile event, and it's great to get people together in a room talking about climate and climate change more broadly.
Well, if it's a fun day out, please invite me next time, because I'd very much like to be there. I'm getting more and more into this topic myself. It's probably something that I've only really started reading about in the last, I can say it, 6 to 12 months. I suppose I'm at a different end of the market now, if you like. But it is increasingly interesting, and it's increasingly obvious what a big part this has got to play in the future, not just of the mortgage industry, but the housing industry and the whole future of the country, in effect.
And it's evolving at such speed as well, I would say, at the moment. I think there's a lot of work going on below the surface with a lot of companies, and I think next year will be quite an exciting year when we see things start to come out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw a nice open question just to begin our discussion, because it'll help people understand a bit of the big picture first. So if I were just to ask you all, what do you see as the key issues with the UK housing stock right now? Anybody want to pick that up first?
I don't mind picking that off first. Well, we know that there's varying reports on climate change and carbon emissions across properties, but we know that roughly, depending on which report you read, 15 to 20% of all of the UK carbon emissions come from our housing stock, which is just over what we see from cars. And you think, we talk a lot, don't we, as a population around what we get from cars on the road, and less so about what's emitted by buildings. The government has signed committed to getting to net zero by 2050, and that will include significant investment in our leaky housing stock, the oldest housing stock in Europe, as it's claimed to be. About £250 billion worth of investment is needed in UK housing, and that's not a sum of money that can come from the government alone. So we need private sector finance to try and plug that gap and support homeowners to really move in the direction of decarbonising their homes. So to answer your question more broadly, there are quite a few key issues with our UK housing stock, but not ones that are unable to fix. So.
No, and I think as well, the main source of heating in most homes in the UK is gas, and gas can never be carbon neutral. So I think there's long term, if you look further down the line, there's that electrification of heat that's got to come, and that's a big change in consumer behavior as well. But that's the other aspect of it that I think is going to be the main transition.
Yeah, and I would also say a particular challenge for the UK is actually the very decentralized ownership structure of our housing stock, because, you know, if you think about countries where the majority of people rent, and not only they rent, but the private rented sector is very institutionalized, it's heavily regulated, there can be that you don't have to engage with quite so many stakeholders to be able to kind of effect large scale change in terms of retrofitting. You can retrofit a whole housing estate or a whole building, whereas you know, 2 in 3 of the homes that don't meet the EPC, I'm going into jargon mode now, energy performance certificate rating of C or above, 2 in 3 of those inefficient homes are owner occupied. And also in the private rented sector alone, again, 2 in 3 homes don't meet that standard. So if we put aside for a moment the fact that an EPC C isn't even a guarantee of an efficient home in the first place, the mass of homes that are below that standard are owned by individuals. And so we're going to have to kind of almost convince, change hearts and minds, one household or one landlord at a time, which is why I think the broker role in this is absolutely key, and the role of the wider mortgage market.
So again, just playing a little bit devil's advocate here, you've spoken about that EPC rating of C or above. Why is C or above? Why is that the relevant standard? What is that actually for? What's the purpose of saying it's got to be C or above?
I suppose an EPC of C, EPC rating, it wasn't really originally designed to be a measure of the carbon footprint of or carbon emissions of a home. It was more about the efficiency from a more cost-saving point of view. So it's being used as a proxy because it's kind of the best thing that we have. But there are a lot of talks in behind the scenes, I believe, with governments to see how we can reform the system, or within the market, are there other proxies that we can use? It's we're having to move forward with a flawed system. But at the same time, we shouldn't wait for perfection to...
I agree with that completely, Chloe, that the EPC is definitely not the right tool to be using, but it's the best of what we've got. And I think the EPC C, the way that we view it, is that's getting a property to have all the fabric first improvements carried out would hopefully get you to that level. So you have all your insulation done and you would expect to be at an EPC C. Because right. As we know, EPCs won't recommend at the moment things like electrification of heat in some instances because of the data that feeds into it and those flaws that Chloe alluded to.
So as you say, it's the best of what we got because it measures the energy efficiency at least of the home, even if it doesn't actually measure, for example, the emissions. So it doesn't make any guarantees about how carbon efficient it is. It just makes them some form of guide. It's a starting point. Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. That makes sense. And I think I'm right in saying that there are certain rules around the rented sector and what you're going to have to and when you've got to achieve these EPC ratings by in order to be able to either rent a home out as new or continue to rent a home out that's already been rented out. And that's going to be linked to EPCs.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And hopefully most people who are listening to this podcast are already aware of that as well. But it is important. It is important.
If you're not, just go and have Google minimum energy efficiency standards for buy-to-let properties and then you will find all of the dates.
Yeah.
Just in case someone's listening along and hasn't heard.
Just one interesting observation. I was looking up the EPC rating of my own house just a couple of weeks ago. And my house doesn't have a current EPC rating because it hasn't been assessed since 2007. I moved in 2009. Obviously, the EPC ratings only last for 10 years. The EPC rating that expired back in 2017 was a rating of C. Interestingly enough, according to the government website, the most I can achieve is an EPC rating of C, probably because of the age of my house. It's just over 100 years old. And I think that's something that, again, you know, you can aspire to do so much to your EPC rating, but actually there is sometimes only so much you can do. And I believe there are some homes, for example, listed homes don't even have an EPC rating and aren't subject to the same rules. So again, it shows some of the flaws with the EPC rating system. Quite interesting.
Do you know what? I'll chip in here at the risk of being a bit controversial, Gordon. I think there's an interesting definition here between what we do in our industry and what the building sector does. And we know on the subject of EPCs, we're all in agreement that, you know, they're not being used for what they were originally designed for. They were designed to look at the cost of energy as opposed to the carbon emissions. But as Chloe really, really well highlighted, it's the best we've got. And if we wait for perfection, we've got to get to net zero in 27 years. We're just not going to get there if we keep waiting for things to change. But I do think there's an important definition to go, this is how things are at the moment. It isn't how they will always be. And when it comes to mortgage advisors and mortgage brokers, I really don't want your audience listening in thinking, oh my goodness, this sounds like such a lot to get your head around, you know, listed buildings, heat pumps, and thinking, do you know what, I'm just going to disengage from that market. Because I'll be honest, as a broker myself, once upon a time, you've got enough on your plate. You're thinking about a really broad range of topics. You're thinking about consumer duty. You're thinking about rates. You're just trying to keep on top of where things are going in this market at the moment. And I think the kind of takeaway from me is, as a broker, I wouldn't be getting too lost in the detail of particular heating technology. Have enough of a knowledge to have a conversation and know when the right time is to hand that conversation off to a construction expert or a whole home surveyor or someone who can look at retrofit products. And I just wanted to call that out, because I do think that it could be a bit overwhelming to listen in thinking, oh, crikey, if a client says to me, how am I going to get to EPCB? I don't know where I'd even start talking about that. And you know, that it's a guide at the moment. In the market, we're using these things as guides. They're not particularly black and white.
It is an interesting point, though, because I know when I used to, I mean, at a point in my career, I used to supervise mortgage advisors. And one of the things I used to say to them is, you're not expected to know everything. You can't know everything about everything. What you are expected to know is who to ask, who to refer to, when to pass the, and that makes your point, Rachel. You know, there comes a point when you go, you need sufficient knowledge to know that actually the right thing to do. It's a little bit like broader financial advice. As a mortgage advisor, you need to know, when do I need to pass this person over to a pensions expert? When do I need to pass this person over to a later life lending expert? When do I need to pass this person over to somebody who knows a little bit more about how to make a property more energy efficient and carbon neutral than I know about? So I think that's a very fair point. The other thing you've done there, Rachel, is you've anticipated one of my questions for later on in the. Well, that's fine.
Completely unintended there, Gordon. But I will, as you mentioned, kind of knowledge and information, I'll take the opportunity to highlight those were the key things that were front of mind when designing the broker handbook. And we put that together in conjunction with the Association of Mortgage Intermediaries, of course, Chloe and the wider team at AAMI, the Building Societies Association, the Energy Savings Trust, the Equity Release Council, LNG Mortgage Club, Mortgage Climate Action Group, IMLA, Intermediary Mortgage Lenders Association, and UK Finance. I'm going to give myself points there for getting
well remembered.
Can you just remind
me who it's CPD accredited by as well?
Absolutely, CPD accredited by the London Institute of Banking and Finance, and we are incredibly grateful for that accreditation. And do you know what? So many people come up to me at events and stop me and say, do you know what? That's a really useful guide. And it's 62 pages. There's two covers included in that. So let's say 60 pages of content. And I would really use that
heavy.
As a kind of
It's control. Not heavy, though.
No, it's not heavy. Well, thank you. And also, it's really useful for a quick control F, you know, just a quick dump of where you can go for information to go, do you know what, my clients asked me something about solar panels. Where can I just get a snippet of information that I know is reliable and credible? So I'd thoroughly recommend, if brokers haven't had the chance to go and have a skim through, save it as a link in your desktop, and kind of have that as a reference point. And I know, Chloe, you were heavily involved in the production of that before I joined the GFI, so feel free to add in anything from your point of view as well.
Well, no, I think you've summed it up really. It is a reference manual, and it provides a bit of a foundation for the education journey that we hope brokers are going to be going on. But we know that there's still more work to do. And building on what we were saying about the role brokers can play in all of this, I would say a big factor of it as well is behaviour change and encouraging to be just planting the seeds in the mind about what consumers can be doing to bring down their energy bills. So rather worrying too much about EPCs, you can get a smart meter and actually see how much energy you're using and run experiments in your home and see, you know, what uses less, or like when, if you can use it at certain times where the demand is lower and get lower costs, things like that. But also changes like energy efficient light bulbs or, you know, putting TVRs on the radiators and foil down the back of the radiator. And I know we don't want brokers to be experts in energy efficiency. We're not expecting that. But these are such small little tips that there's really no consequence in opening up that conversation. And I think the reticence we're seeing at the moment amongst brokers in even broaching this topic is the fact that there's not a lot of product development out there. So there's a fear of, oh, I don't want to raise the subject and be like, yeah, great conversation. Yeah, I haven't got any recommendations for you though. And it's it feels a bit of a dead end. So we're trying to encourage brokers to break that impasse and just start having the conversations like you would with your friend in the pub. It doesn't have to lead to recommendation now. I mean, let's face it, we're in a cost of living crisis. A lot of people aren't going to be in a position now to get solar panels. But maybe if you have the conversation today, then maybe in 5 years' time when they come to remortgage, they are in that better position. They've got more housing equity. And actually, there's more lender innovation. There's more product choice. And you've created that demand. And we're not going to see that innovation unless we start creating the demand now. And that starts with awareness.
Just to echo Chloe's point on that. Sorry, Gordon.
No, you're fine. You carry on.
I think, again, part of being an advisor in that conversation is you're planting the seed that you're able to have a conversation about finance for retrofit. And if your customers don't, if you don't flag it and they don't know it, and then your clients are potentially going off and Googling home loans or Googling for, you know, the most local retrofit provider and kind of wandering on and finding whatever finance they want to find, which might be the appropriate action for them anyway. Unsecured might be a better option depending on the customer's circumstances. But I think as long as you're flagging that actually, if you're thinking about retrofitting your home, I as a mortgage advisor can probably help you do something or can at least have a conversation with you about it. You might be speaking to your customers about something that they didn't even know you offered as a service. And we talk about that when we talk about life insurance and other things. And if you don't flag to your customers that you do it, they don't know it.
No, you're absolutely right.
I think it's part of the natural journey when you're given advice and you go through the affordability with the customer. That's a great point to then talk to them and open up the conversation about as well, especially with the cost of living crisis as well. So I agree with that point, definitely.
Yeah, I think I was going to ask, there's a couple of questions you've sort of anticipated. So first one, I think we've sort of covered, but maybe it's not in as much detail. How aware do you think most consumers are of the issues? So we've been talking about educating brokers, but what about the consumers themselves, right at the front end? Do you think they know that we're in a housing, you know, we're in a crisis in terms of?
I mean, I honestly don't think that if you talking to friends or talking down the pub, they wouldn't have a clue about what's got to happen with the UK housing stock over the next sort of 27 years. And some would be horrified if you told them, there'll be electrification of heat and things are going to change drastically. And I think there's got to be a huge UK-wide awareness campaign that has to happen to support this transition. And the key thing for me is that it's got to be uniformed. What the message that we're given from all sectors has to be the same message. And it has to be simple, and it's improve the fabric of your home, insulate, and consider the things that you can do to improve your energy efficiency. And eventually the electrification of heat will come. And I think that we just need to keep it really simple and all be saying the same thing.
Just to pick up on that point, on about the consumer demand point, I don't mind quoting because they've definitely said it on a public webinar before. So I don't think I'm misspeaking. Leeds Building Society did a piece of research into where you'd go to find advice for things like sustainability. And worryingly, among a certain demographic, TikTok came out as the first place you'd go and look for financial advice for your retrofitting. And we laugh about it because we work in the industry, but you know, this is the next generation of first time buyers. This is the demographic of homeowners that we need to be reaching as an industry. So although we're seeing that there's the demand is there, but it's very nascent, we are seeing in other industries things like social consciousness and environmental purpose really becoming more significant drivers in buying choices. And you look now, if you were to compare adverts on the TV now to adverts that you saw 5 years ago, brands from, you know, really well-known household brands are beginning to talk about sustainability, are beginning to talk about the fact that they've cut plastic in their packaging and are trying to win hearts and minds in that way. So I think we are seeing a real shift in consumer behaviour and people willing to spend a little bit more money if it means they know that they're not, you know, contributing to global warming and they're acting in a more environmentally friendly way. So we are seeing that shift in areas probably more broadly than in financial services.
Mm. I think as well, you know, on the panel yesterday of one of our co-panelists, Trudy Wolf, you know, filling us in what's happening in the surveying sector and saying that actually you are starting to see the energy efficiency of a home and the EPC rating coming up as a priority or in the priority list for home buyers. And that's something that maybe 2 or 3 years ago would have just fallen off the radar. People are more concerned about school proximity and Wi-Fi coverage and things like that. So I think as soon as this starts to actually impact property prices and buyers' perceptions of value based on how energy efficient a home is, then that's really then going to have to start with being reflected in the valuations process and in turn, maybe in the underwriting process in terms of your affordability and what your expected bills are. So this is more just going to become the future. It's going to encroach into the mainstream rather than being a kind of a niche. You know, you have your mainstream mortgages and your green mortgages. I think this is the direction of travel that it's going to become just part of everything.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think the interesting thing, what you were saying about potentially valuations, the other area it can affect is marketability. And I think that's probably almost before it'll start affecting valuations. It'll almost be like, yes, you know, doing certain things to your home. We know this with home improvements anyway. There are certain things you can do to your home which have no impact whatsoever on the actual value or what you can sell it for, if you can sell it, but has a significant impact on the speed with which you can sell it. And at the moment, that's probably for those people who are trying to sell their homes. I'm certainly seeing evidence in my locality that houses which were selling inside 4 weeks are now taking 4 months, 6 months plus to sell. And I'm sure that's a countrywide picture. I'm sure that's something you're all experiencing in your localities as well. So yeah, quite an interesting one. So going back to that, we all need to be speaking from the same song sheet, which I think was a point Danielle made at the start. Who is going to do this education of the consumers? Because obviously we can say mortgage advisors, brokers have a part to play in this, but who else, broader, outside of our industry, who else is going to give these key messages?
I think when we speak about this, you know what, we quote him all the time. Someone should get lovely Kevin a plaque from LNG that says country, not club. But so I always feel like I must directly quote it to him so no one thinks it was my idea. And I think that applies to green in our industry, but also more broadly. We talk a bit in sustainability about this kind of carrot and stick approach. So I'm going to speak completely hypothetically here, but let's imagine that minimum energy efficiency standards came in for residential properties as well as buy-to-let properties. That's obviously a regulatory driver. If your house became unsellable, and please don't think I'm crystal balling here, because I'm not. I'm just coming up with theoretical solutions.
There are groups lobbying for this, it's not completely inconceivable.
Yes, just before I commit to everything and scare the whole industry in one podcast and swiftly find myself removed from the industry for life.
I've never had that impact on a podcast before, so it'd be interesting.
You know what? Yeah, absolutely. What a way to go down. So let's say they assume there's some pretty harsh regulatory penalties across, let's say, lenders and homeowners and landlords. But then let's also assume that there's some more governmental levers that pull on a carrot, if you will. So you might see things like energy adjusted stamp duty, or maybe we'd see council, I'm going to make this up on the spot, council tax adjusted. Maybe we'd see other things from a more local authority level or more from a governmental level. My firm belief as it stands at the moment, and I absolutely reserve the right to change my mind at a later date, but my belief as it stands at the moment is that finance is not the driver. And by that, I mean, you don't often get someone come bursting through your doors as a mortgage advisor going, I've seen this really wonderful rate and I'm going to go buy a house because I've seen the rate and the rate's just great, so I want to buy the house. You see people come in and say, I want to buy this house. What mortgage can you get me? And if we apply that same approach to green and sustainability, there'll be an outcome. People will come with the driver of I want to green up my house. I want to make my house more energy efficient for a wide variety of reasons. Maybe that's securing your asset value as the market begins to shift, which we hope it does slowly, not fast, because we'll create a secondary issue with stranded assets, which we could talk about for a lot longer than we've got on this podcast. Maybe it's because they want to make their house more enjoyable to live in. And there's a huge amount of reports out there around the cost saving to the NHS for more environmentally friendly properties. So lots of different drivers. And what finance must do and what our sector must do really well is make sure that we enable that market, that we're there when the customers come calling and say, we're ready, we know we need to do something. We're able to, A, give good guidance. And I use the word guidance, not advice. Good guidance on where to go for credible advice on home fitting, because we wouldn't tell people which kitchen to buy. So we definitely shouldn't be telling people what to do in that respect either. But also that we're able to give really good advice on financial products, really good advice on what serves them, and that the products are there. And essentially, that's what my job is to make sure that when the demand is there, there are the finance products available that sit alongside that. And I can see Danielle nodding along, which you can't hear on the podcast. So
no,
I know
you
that
can't.
Fits in, that
I
fits
am
in quite well
but I am agreeing.
To the work Danielle's doing. So I'll hand over to you.
Well, yes, I was going to ask a question, which I'll link to that directly for you, Danielle. So what more can be done to develop the range and quality of what we loosely call green finance products? And how do we ensure these are fit for purpose?
So I think we firstly have to recognise that as banks, as Rachel alluded to, we aren't experts in decarbonising the home either. And it's to set up impactful partnerships with the people that are, and develop propositions that customers trust, so with partners that they trust as well. So I think that's one of the things. But we also, and I talked to Rachel directly about this, is data. We need more data. We need to understand who our target market is, what needs to be done, and what products suit certain customers and the property types that they're living in. And there's not a lot of that at the moment. It's still in the infancy. And that allows us to design products that will, that people will want, because we don't want to design something that people don't want. So I think there's a lot of work there to be done. And then once we develop the propositions about marketing the right, whether that means that we have to do TikTok videos to attract the right types of customers as well. But yeah, there's a lot of work still needs to be done. And I think a key part of that is recognizing we aren't experts, and partnerships have to be a key part of that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, the point when you mentioned TikTok earlier, I was going to say, well, if our audience is watching TikTok videos, actually we've got to start making TikTok videos as an industry. Yeah. You know, and let's be honest, I know, you know, I'm aware of a number of brokers who make a lot of TikTok videos and are very, very successful. They do it to market their business, but they do it because it's a direct way of talking to their future audience. So we've perhaps all got to do that.
Absolutely. To crowd out the noise as well of the ones that aren't really qualified but are getting a big following on those platforms. I think as well what I was going to add to that point was how it's really difficult for individual lenders to be able to do all of this themselves, because you can have a fantastic suite of green finance products and you can have all this collateral, you can have calculators, downloadable PDFs, but ultimately all of that's got your logo on it. And if a broker is sitting in front of a client, they can't be showing one lender's stuff as their introduction to green and all the options available. There needs to be some more, you know, further upstream, there needs to be kind of neutral territory that, and resources for brokers to be able to explain all this stuff without it having to be seen as owned by any particular lender. And I think as a result of that, that's why we've founded the Mortgage Climate Action Group. So that's a kind of a coalition of many, many stakeholders in the broker and lender sectors who want to basically come together to be, to create resources, to create knowledge, to form. We've just set up a series of working groups to kind of discuss issues like setting standards and, you know, how we can talk about issues like greenwashing and the compliance implications. So all of that is for the benefit of making sure that we can, you know, going back to this single version of the truth, singing from the same hymn sheet, insert stock phrase here. That's now something that has become actually the official steering group for the Association of Mortgage Intermediaries Green Initiative.
Can I just ask a question? And so, Lady Rachel, in particular, you were talking earlier about the fantastic tool that's been produced to support brokers. So the Green Finance Mortgage Brokers Handbook, whatever its correct title is, I apologise for that. Is there any proposal to develop something similar for the consumers? You know, I look at that and go, actually, do you know what? If I were a broker, I'd almost want, and I know I'm not supposed to, so I'm not encouraging that, but I'd almost want to be able to share some of that content, because it is written in a language that Joe Public can understand. So are we looking to develop something similar?
You know what? It's a really good question, and one that is widely debated. So where does this information for consumers come from? And there's an element here of cart before horse in which we're around this should come. We need to get really good information out there to consumers. Does that fall to kind of coming from a government level? Does that come from a, you know, we've got fantastic resources out there at the moment, like the Energy Savings Trust, etc. But kind of wholesale, how do we get that out there? But I don't think doing a whole country leaflet drop is quite in the spirit of green and sustainability, if I'm honest. Does that come from the GFI? So we were created essentially to sit between kind of public and private sector to mobilise finance. I think if we go right back to, if we at the moment were to flood the market with loads of consumer information, much to Chloe's point earlier, where's the road going, right? Where's the road going? And if there aren't the finance products out there at the moment, and there aren't the mechanisms to support homeowners in this transition, the last thing we want to do as a country is have another spray foam disaster where people are getting the wrong end of the stick, going getting spray foam, and then for anyone who's not au fait with the situation, potentially end up with an unmortgageable property and have significant cost taking it out. And that's a very sad extreme. I think we need to be really mindful in how we approach this as an industry. Make sure that at the moment, what we do know is that this is coming down the track. We do know that demand is coming. We do know that we need to have a role to just support, the industry has a role to support mortgage brokers who are having those conversations really early on. But we don't want to jump the gun and tell everyone in the country to go and get a heat pump. A, there's no supply. I mean, we'd love to tell the whole country to go and get a heat pump, I should say, before I get soundbited. So, but, you know, we need to make sure that there's you know, ample supply, ample finance models. And that's what the work that the three of us on the call and hundreds, if not thousands more, you know, across the industry are doing, is making sure that when this demand comes, there is a really good customer journey that sits behind that, that makes sure that we're able to support those customers and finance them. So it's a long answer to the question, but I think it's not as simple as how do we go out and mass educate. We need to think about the infrastructure that sits behind that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I also think that lenders need to have in the back of the mind, what's the trajectory look like from the government perspective? So the government have set targets on heat pumps, have set targets on fabric first improvements. And it's one of the things that we looked at when setting our own internal targets is, okay, if we try to say, oh, we're going to get 60,000 customers to install heat pumps, that's nowhere near what the target is for the government. So we need to make sure that our internal targets are aligned with that trajectory. Otherwise, we're just not going to get there. We're going to be focusing our attention on the wrong thing at the wrong time.
I think the other thing that what you were just saying there made me think about, Danielle, is that over the years I've seen many, many business plans which consist of aspirational targets. This is what we're going to achieve. And actually the roadmap for getting there. So it's all well and good. Again, you go back to the government, we'll just say in the wider piece, the government might have these aspirational targets, but the government needs to give us some guidance, give the industry, give the broader industry some guidance. How is it we're actually going to get to those targets? Because you don't achieve a target simply by having a target. You have to have a plan that gets you there. So always a challenge. And I suppose the other thing at the moment is, you know, we've got some interesting additional challenges within the industry. So, you know, we've got a cost of living crisis, I call it that. We've got interest rates higher than they've been for many, many years. And I just wonder, you know, we've got things like consumer duty due to be introduced end of next month. What impact do those things have, particularly on the brokers who are trying to, you know, who've got to give the best advice they can? How do those things impact on their ability to be able to talk about these really, really important improvements to people's homes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's a huge agenda point for Amy, because the layering of regulation and regulatory creep is a real concern. Firms are constantly seeing, we're seeing a spate of new consultations, and it's great that there's ambition to keep improving the financial services sector. But I think one of the things that we push back on a lot with the FCA is that there's not a lot of big picture thinking in how all of these different regimes fit together. AR regime, there's been talk of reforming senior managers certification regime. The ESG consultation that came out was so ambitious that it almost tried to solve all the world's problems in one kind of set of ideas. And it was including diversity and inclusion and sustainability and nature and the environment, net zero. And it's kind of, there comes a point where you have to prioritize. And as you said, you know, that these things are having targets and having, you know, there were proposals to have board champions, like we have with consumer duty board champions for ESG. One, the idea of having sustainability and D&I in the same remit is so huge that it's, I don't think that would be workable. But two, you know, if we target the wrong things, anything that you measure is, you know, is the thing that you're going to get. So you've really got to be careful what you measure and what you target. People don't know what to prioritize. What we would hate to see is firms prioritizing quick wins or peripheral kind of objectives that would be nice to have over the real meaty stuff of just getting people to reduce the carbon footprints of their homes, you know. And it's great if an office stops printing and changes its light bulbs and, you know, buy some carbon offset or something. But if it, I think it would be more impactful to have a really solid, as Rachel says, a consumer journey with your green advice, more green mortgage advice process, and really help real world people to upgrade their homes.
Mm, so I suppose that just, Daniel, that sort of just links a question back to me, which is, so when you are looking at, your role is looking at products, if you like, and ensuring the development of suitable green finance products. Alongside that, I'm just wondering, so what about, how do we ensure that the processes that run alongside those products, the advice processes, are suitable as well and appropriate? And presumably that's not something you look at, that's a different part of the business, if you like, is it? Or
it is, but I think as part of any product development, 90% of our business comes from intermediaries, comes from the broker market. So we involve them in product development process. We get their input, we get them involved in that journey as well. And as part of the sort of product development, we invite them to come along and give us feedback on what we're doing. And that's something that we'll continue to do. And certainly with the Project Power, we've been speaking to the industry a lot about what we're proposing to do. We've been to the Mortgage Advisor event in London, where we spoke to brokers face to face to get their feedback and understand what their expectations are and how we can support them in any product that we design, and then how they go and advise on it.
Fab. And I think that's absolutely got to be the right approach, because we can't work in silos. We've got to think about the whole, again, I'm thinking back to Consumer Duty. One of the things about Consumer Duty is that we have to consider the whole product journey from development right through to distribution, and everything in between.
Outcomes as well. I think that's something that's really key. Mm. That's a difference from every regulatory regime that's gone before. And it was one of the things the FCA pulled out in their Green Mortgages speech, when they said, you've got to be looking at, if you're selling a green mortgage, looking back, years later, when that, maybe the further advance or the new mortgage product has been used to finance green home upgrades, actually looking at those outcomes and was the money used as intended. And I think being able to monitor that is, it's supporting customers to meet their objectives, but also avoiding causing foreseeable harm. So there is the other hand of that in, I think Rachel was mentioning this earlier about, your clients need to be aware that if they do want to do anything to their home, you should probably know about it as a mortgage advisor. Just because you don't want to recommend them a product that shuts doors for them, even if you don't have a product that's going to facilitate everything, you at least don't want to recommend the product that's going to sort of tie them into a fixed rate that prevents them from getting a further advance. And when they told you at fact find stage, I'd like to go off grid and have an eco home and things, that's a case study I nicked from a very good compliance consultant called Lee Coates. So I feel I should attribute him there, because it's definitely not my own idea. But he put that on the map for us in thinking, for me personally, it's not just about goal-oriented and proactive action. It's some can be about protection and preventing bad outcomes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things in, again, on Project Power, when we've been working on the proposition, is how do we measure that the product does what it's supposed to do? So the goals of the GHFA are that it reduces the emissions in the customer's home. So if the customer buys the product, they expect that it's going to reduce the emissions. It's how do we prove that it's done that? And that's one of the things that we're bringing in, is can we obtain access to smart meter data as a lender, because we're currently listed as an other user? Is there a way that we can get that can evidence to say we're not greenwashing, we haven't produced a product that said it was green and it's not, because we've got the evidence that shows that it's done what it said it would do. So that's, like I said, we'll speak to Smart DCC, and we're hoping that from an industry perspective, banks may be able to get some access to the meter data in some way to help them prove that what we're developing is doing what it said it'll do.
Mm. Fabulous. Some interesting challenges, and I'm sure we could talk about these all afternoon, but we haven't really got all afternoon. I've got a last couple of questions. So first one, and appreciating Chloe, AME is a trade body. LIBF, professional body, what do you see our role as a professional body in helping the sector meet these various challenges?
So I would say the role of that LIBF can play is really formalising broker education around this. and not only integrating it into your kind of qualifications that you offer, but making it central to the basic qualifications. So getting it in CMAP and to send the message that this is going to be an integral part of brokers' roles for many years to come. So I think, you know, particularly for the younger generations who are at the start of their career, that this is going to become more and more pertinent to their role. So, but we're happy, we have already collaborated and been in open dialogue around this. So I'm sure we can develop further CPD resources, Mortgage Climate Action Group and AMI and GFI, all kind of working together to try and deliver better educational resources. But it's, yes, it's a team effort. If you have anything to add there, Rachel.
Yeah, I
think things like this as well, Gordon, I think reassuring the advisor community that this isn't a massive mountain to climb. This is a small keyhole surgery to the existing advice they're giving. And I think keeping consistent with that messaging keeps us engaged with the broker market. I think if we start really overcomplicating this, we're just going to lose hearts and minds and people are disengaged. And that would be a massive shame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just want to say, for those of you listening to this that haven't seen the handbook that we've referred to through this, I only read it 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it is a fantastic tool. It is very, very simple. It will help with your education. I'd like to think, you know, there's some CPD there. Now, CPD for mortgage advisors is not mandatory. We know that. However, I would just say to anybody out there who is not doing regular CPD, and CPD includes even listening to this, you know, listening to this podcast will hopefully give you some education. But if you're not doing regular CPD, I just question how you can possibly be acting in the best interests of your consumers all the time. So do take the time to read that handbook. It's a really easy read, and it's got some really interesting information in. And it's interesting, A, from a point of view of things that you can support your clients with, but also from a very, very personal point of view, you might look at it and go, oh crikey, is it that simple? I could do even small things, you know, some of the things you referenced earlier, like, you know, just changing to more energy efficient light bulbs, changing to a smart meter. And I have to say, I only changed to a smart meter last year, and it was a bit of an eye-opener for me, but it was an even bigger eye-opener for my wife.
You get very conscious of it, don't you?
Oh my goodness. But we've gone away from looking at it daily now. I have to say, we've gone away from looking at it daily because now we know what the behaviours are that will set it going wee mad. So, okay. So very last question for the day, which I want to address to all of you. What progress do you realistically expect us, and when I say us, I mean the very broad us, to make over the next 12 months? What would be success in the next 12 months? Anybody got any initial views on that?
So for me, it would be that we design and put to market a product that enables the uptake of retrofit, and that gets really good traction. I think it's got to be a success, and it does what it's supposed to do, so we can see that measurable reduction in emissions. And I would like to see the market flooded with them, all lenders offering it.
Sounds ambitious, but you've got to have ambitious plans. So that sounds good. Okay, fantastic. So from a product development point of view, to see lots of new products out there that are going to make a real difference in the next 12 months, measurable difference.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Success over the next 12 months, Gordon, for me would be a couple of things. A, that the broker community are engaged at kind of wholesale with the sustainability agenda and understand how that fits within their business. I think we are going to see some really exciting products come to market in the next 12 months. I echo what Danielle said. I don't think it sounds that ambitious, actually. I think we've got some really exciting work going on across the industry. And more broadly than that, progress would be that the narrative around green mortgages comes away from speaking about 10 basis points off a rate here or a bit of cashback here. Because actually, do you know what? Lenders are trying really hard, and we're asking lenders to innovate into a market where there isn't an established customer demand. And as an industry, we really need to get behind our lenders and support them as they test and learn, support the market, see how they can use their own customer data to continue to innovate. And we are right on. If you imagine kind of a massive ladder, let's call that the green mortgage ladder, kind of 10, 15, 20 years from now, assuming that green mortgages are no longer a thing because it's just a mortgage and it's kind of integrated into what we do, and I'm terribly out of a job, but I'll worry about that then. I think that, you know, if we picture this ladder of green mortgages, we're on the first rung of this ladder. There is so much room left to go when it comes to product design and product innovation. And the great thing is that because we're thinking more broadly about product design, it gives brokers a really good opportunity to really add some value. You know, we've seen over the last 5-10 years, intermediary lending grow year after year after year. We're now at 80% of all mortgages in the UK are transacted by a mortgage intermediary. And immersing yourself in this subject and understanding more about the niche products that are coming out from lenders, and they will be quite different. And there won't be a standard 2- and 5-year fix. They'll have different features to them that you're not used to giving advice on. That really does set you apart as a mortgage advisor and really gives you an opportunity to deepen relationships and safeguard your relationship with that client for generations to come. So I just would like to see that the next 12 months, we really are on the road to understanding where advice fits into to green and sustainability more broadly.
Fabulous. Okay, thank you very much. Chloe?
I'd wholly echo that. And I think, you know, it's almost, that's entirely the Amy message. So, you know, you're definitely on brand there with the exact kind of things that we constantly advocating for in terms of the value that brokers bring. It's a real opportunity to consolidate the value of advice and to demonstrate that, because there is a bit of a risk here in that if this happens in too chaotic a fashion, or people try and rush into this too quickly, that and particularly if pressure is placed on lenders to improve the energy efficiency of their back books in a time frame that's just unachievable, we could see the broker potentially cut out of the conversation, which is the last thing that we want, because the market works so well currently. In terms of getting people a good deal, Bank of England research shows that broker presence in the market keeps lenders competitive and brings down overall cost for borrowers. FCA research shows that on switching shows that you know, consumers are generally on the best deal, and that the fact of, you know, if you've got to treat your customer well and you want to expect them to come back in 5 years, do the remortgage, you've got to get it right at the start. So there's a real set of virtuous incentives in this market. We don't want to lose this. And so just if the success for me in 12 months would look like the general feeling and general attitudes of in the kind of broker community would go from reticence and nervousness towards one of optimism and enthusiastic embracing of what this has to offer. Whether that looks like firms starting to really embed this into their training compliance processes, or it means that, you know, we've got some really good case studies of the advice journey that everybody can learn from. We've just really got everybody talking and made a big splash in sort of the trade press. And we've got people really thinking about this, put it on the map as a key issue in this industry. That's what success would look like for me.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I just want to link back to something, Rachel, you said about, and I think it sort of sums up again what Chloe's just said about the broker market being engaged. All I would say is that if the broker market listens to people like the three of you ladies this afternoon, they cannot help but be engaged. They really should be. Because, and I think that's the key thing about, if you really want to engage people, it isn't just what you say, it's how you say it and it's who you get to say it. And I've listened over the years, I've been to many, many industry events, and I've listened to some fantastic messages being poorly delivered. But what I've heard this afternoon is a really, really positive message being really well delivered by three people who are so passionate about their part of the industry. And it's fantastic to hear. And I just challenge anybody not to be engaged if they listen to the three of you. So thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you very much.
No, that's quite all right. I feel like I do need to wrap up for this afternoon because we've taken up nearly an hour, and I appreciate people listening to this might have been spending their lunch break, or might be doing something else, have another appointment to get to, somebody else that they need to educate, another consumer they need to educate and advise. But thank you all very much for your time this afternoon. I have really enjoyed the discussion, and I'm sure that over the next few months we will have some more specific areas of this to talk about. It'd be great to follow this up during the course of the rest of the year. And certainly to reflect and look at what is actually achieved over the next 12 months.
I didn't realize you were going to hold us to it.
We'll absolutely come back. It's absolutely.
Well, I've got to actually do it now, haven't we? Yeah, so we're on the record as having said that's what we want to achieve. So
absolutely. And I'll put myself on the record as saying if there's anything that we can do to support, you know, at the LIBF, and if you want me to attend any of your events and to help talk to any of your members, then I'd be more than happy to do so.
Absolutely, so, take you up on that as a whole, Gordon. Yeah, and I thank you very much.
You can. So. Yeah. That's brilliant. Ladies, thank you so much. Listeners, thank you very much for sticking with us. I hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. Another edition will be recorded sometime towards the end of July. In the meantime, those of you going off on holiday, I hope you have a fantastic break, and we will catch up again very soon. Thank you very much from the LIBF.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to find out more about our qualifications, training, and upcoming events, then go to libf.ac.uk. We also have other podcast channels that dive into topics like trade finance, financial advice, fintech, and more. You can find all of them at libf.ac.uk/podcasts.